And good afternoon. You're listening to Ken Hudnall. This is the Ken Hudnall Show. Coming to you from our studios right here in exciting El Paso, Texas. Gateway to the Old West and the most haunted city in the country. Well, I was asked for an update on our Sam situation. My wife was attacked by him. I can only describe him as a lunatic at the entrance to the Sam store. She asked for security to be called, and the employee refused. She had gone ahead of me, so I got there about the time he drew back, and I stepped between them, and he continued to rant and rave. He said that he spent so much money there he could say and do what he wanted, and it was okay with the store. So the assistant manager, whose name was Jorge, I reported it to him. The off-duty police officer that supposedly furnishing security couldn't be found. He has showed up a few minutes later. He was drinking a cup of coffee, which he was very careful not to spill a drop of. The only Sam security that showed up was a young lady who weighed about 110 pounds. And when she saw there was an issue, she ran. Well, the assistant manager is going to call me later. And when he did, he told me that they had talked to the guy, and he said I was the aggressor for defending my wife. I should have let him hit her. She's 74 years old, weighs about 125 pounds. Had he hit her, she would not have gotten up. I think I ran into the guy this morning. Every morning I take my dogs down to the local Valero and I get lottery tickets. And he was smirking and looks like he was going to approach me until I turned and faced him and my jacket rolled up and he saw that I had a pistol on my belt. He decided it was time to be elsewhere. It may have been him. If not, he's got a twin. And what has Sam's done to this point? Nothing. I've made numerous reports. It happened the 21st of February, 10 o'clock in the morning. It is now the 24th of March, and they have ignored it completely. Because if we ignore him, he's going to go get tired and go away. Wrong. This is the same town where the massacre took place at Walmart. Their security procedures have not gotten any better in the time since the massacre took place. In fact, they've gotten worse, if anything. The off-duty police officer is supposed to be there to make sure everything is okay. Look at it as a joke. This guy was so busy with his coffee, he couldn't worry about anything else. Well, they need to be aware that I have neither forgotten nor forgiven. Well, as I said, today is the 24th of March, 83rd day of the year. 282 days remain till the year's over with. On this day in history, in 1199, King Richard I of England, the Lionhearted, is wounded by a crossbow while fighting in France. He died April 6th. 1387, English victory over a Franco-Castilian Flemish fleet in the Battle of Margate off the coast of Margate. 1401, Turco-Mongol Emperor Timur sacks Damascus. 1603, King James VI of Scotland is proclaimed King James I of England and Ireland when Elizabeth dies. 1603, Tokugawa Ieyasu is granted the title of shogun from the Emperor Go-Yozai and establishes the Tokugawa shogunate in Edo in Japan. Well, 1663, the province of Carolina is granted by charter to 8 lords proprietor in return for their assistance in restoring Charles II of England to the throne. 1720, Count Frederick of Hesse Castle is elected king of Sweden by the Riksdag of the Estates after his consort Ulrika Eleonora abdicated the throne on February 29th. 1721, Johann Sebastian Bach dedicated 6 concertos to Margrave Christian Ludwig of Brandenburg-Schwedt, now commonly called the Brandenburg Concertos. 1765, Great Britain passes the Quartering Act that requires the 13 colonies to house British troops at no cost to the British government. 1794, in Krakow, Tadeusz Kościuszko announces a general uprising against Imperial Russia and the Kingdom of Prussia and assumes the powers of the commander-in-chief of all the Polish forces. 1829, the Parliament of the United Kingdom passes the Roman Catholic Relief Act of 1829. It allows Catholics to serve in Parliament. 1832, in Hiram, Ohio, a group of men beat and tar and feather Mormon leader Joseph Smith. Now, he's the one that actually started what we know of as the Mormon Church. He's the one that allegedly translated the Golden Tablets. 1854, President Jose Gregorio Monagas abolishes slavery in Venezuela. 1860, Sakura Damon Incident, the assassination of Japanese Chief Minister Lee Nasuki took place on this date. 1869, the last of Tito Kawawa's forces surrendered to the New Zealand government, which ended his uprising. 1878, the British frigate HMS Eurydice sinks. More than 300 die in that sinking. 1882, Robert Koch announces the discovery of Mycobacterium tuberculosis. That's the bacterium that's responsible for the disease we know as tuberculosis. 1900, Mayor of New York City, Robert Anderson Van Wyck, breaks ground for a new underground rapid transit railroad that would link Manhattan and Brooklyn. 1921, the 1921 Women's Olympiad begins in Monte Carlo. That's the first international women's sports event. 1927, Nanking Incident. Foreign warships bombard Nanjing in China in defense of the foreign citizens that live in the city. 1934, U.S. Congress passes the Tidings-McDuffie Act, allows the Philippines to become a self-governing commonwealth. 1944, Adrutini Massacre. German troops murder 135 Italian civilians in the city of Rome. 1944, in an event later dramatized in the movie The Great Escape, 76 Allied prisoners of war begin breaking out of the German camp Stalag-Luft III. 1946, a British cabinet mission arrives in India to discuss and plan for the transfer of power from the British Raj to Indian leadership. 1961, Quebec Board of the French Language is established. 1976, in Argentina, the armed forces overthrow the constitutional government of President Isabel Perón, start a 7-year dictatorial style period, self-styled the national reorganization process. 1977, Morarji Desai becomes the Prime Minister of India, the first Prime Minister not to belong to the Indian National Congress. 1980, El Salvadorian Archbishop Oscar Romero is assassinated while celebrating Mass in San Salvador. 1986, the Losco gas explosion leads to new UK laws on landfill gas migration and gas protection on landfill sites. 1989, in Prince William Sound in Alaska, the Exxon Valdez spills 240,000 barrels of crude oil after running aground. 1993, discovery of comet Shoemaker-Levy 9. 1998, Mitchell Johnson and Andrew Golden, aged 11 and 13, fire upon teachers and students at Westside Middle School in Jonesboro, Arkansas. 5 people are killed and 10 are wounded. 1998, a tornado sweeps through Danton in India, kills 250 and injures 3,000 others. 1998, the first computer-assisted bone segment navigation performed at the University of Regensburg in Germany. 1999, the Kosovo War. NATO begins attacks on Yugoslavia without United Nations Security Council approval, marking the first time NATO's attacked a sovereign country. 1999, a lorry carrying margarine and flour catches fire inside the Mont Blanc tunnel. The resulting fire kills 38 people. 2003, the Arab League voted 21-1 in favor of a resolution demanding an end to the 2003 invasion of Iraq. 2008, Bhutan officially becomes a democracy, has its first ever general election. 2015, German Wings Flight 9525 crashes in the French Alps in the apparent pilot mass murder-suicide. All 150 people on board are killed. 2019, Jakarta MRT begins operation. A lot of births and deaths on this date in history. Far too many to go into. Christian, on the holidays and observances, Christian Feast Day, Catherine of Vestina. Hildelith of Barking, Mac Corinthian of Cloger, Oscar Romero in the Catholic Church, the Anglican Communion in the Lutheran Church, Paul Courtier in the Church of England, Walter Hilton in the Church of England, Day of Remembrance for Truth and Justice in Argentina, go figure, International Day for the Right to the Truth Concerning Gross Human Rights Violations for the Dignity of Victims, National Tree Planting Day in Uganda, Student Day in Scientology, and World Tuberculosis Day internationally. Let's see what else we've got. The end of the Guelderse War. 1545, German Parliament opens in Worms. 1550, France and England signs the Peace of Boulogne. Now, when I talked about James VI, he was the Scottish king and son of Mary, Queen of Scots, who was executed for plotting against Queen Elizabeth, which is the first time they joined the English and the Scottish crowns. 1629, the first game law was passed in the American colonies. Virginia did it. 1664, Roger Williams is granted a charter to colonize Rhode Island. 1731, Jerome, also known as Hieronymus de Salis, is naturalized as British by an act of Parliament. 1792, Benjamin West from the U.S. becomes president of the Royal Academy. Yeah, talk about timing. Okay, 1801, Alexander Pavlovich Romanov becomes Tsar Alexander I of Russia. 1815, the Handel and Haydn Society of Boston is founded. 1828, the first state-owned railway, the Philadelphia and Columbia Railway, is authorized. 1837, Canada gives its black citizens the right to vote. 1848, a state of siege is proclaimed in Amsterdam. 1853, an anti-slavery newspaper called the Provincial Freeman was first published in Windsor, Ontario, edited by Samuel Ringgold Ward and Mary Ann Shad Carey. She was a suffragist and the first black woman publisher in North America. 1855, Manhattan, Kansas, founded as New Boston, Kansas. 1860, the Clipper Andrew Jackson arrives in San Francisco, 89 days from New York, which was considered quite speedy. 1868, Metropolitan Life Insurance Company is formed on this date. 1878, University boat race between Oxford and Cambridge ends in a tie. 1880, Tobacco Growers Mutual Insurance Company is incorporated in Connecticut, which is where our illustrious president owns a mansion. And it also has restrictions that doesn't allow undesirables to live in his neighborhood, such as people of color and those of the Jewish persuasion. In 1883, the first telephone call takes place between New York and Chicago. 1887, Oscar Strauss appointed the first Jewish ambassador from the U.S. to Turkey. 1894, 37 miners killed at Franklin, Washington. 1905, a group of Cretans dedicated to Crete's union with Greece, led by Eutherios Venizelos, meet at the village of Therissa and proclaim a union in defiance of the great powers. The powers that be did not want it to happen. 1907, the first issue of the Georgian Bolshevik newspaper Dro is published. 1906, the census of the British Empire shows Great Britain at that time ruled one-fifth of the world. 1916, a German submarine torpedoed the unarmed French cross-channel packet, the Sussex. 1920, the first U.S. Coast Guard air station established at Morehead City, North Carolina. 1926, the Beehive in The Hague opens the first escalator in the Netherlands. 1932 was the first U.S. radio broadcast from a moving train. 1933, Peter the First Island incorporated as a Norwegian dependency. 1935, Major Bowe's original amateur hour goes national on NBC Radio Network. 1937, in Salem, Illinois, a bus blew a tire, went out of control, killed 18 people. 1941, British troops defeat Italians in Somaliland. 1941, German troops occupy El Agheila in Liberty. In Libya. 1942, the U.S. government begins moving native-born citizens with Japanese ancestry into detention centers under Executive Order 9066, with the intention of preventing homegrown espionage, or what is referred to as fifth columnist. 1944, 811 British bombers attack Berlin. 1944, in occupied Rome, the Nazis execute 335 civilians in retaliation for the previous day's Via Rasella bombing that killed 33 Germans. Himmler had said, for every German who is killed, 10... will be executed. 1944, RAF Rear Gunner Nicholas Alcamady survived a jump from his Lancaster bomber 18,000 feet over Germany. He did not have a parachute. His fall was broken by pine trees and soft snow. He suffered only a sprained leg. 1945, in Operation Varsity, the largest one-day airborne operation of all time, British, U.S., and Canadian paratroopers land east of the Rhine in northern Germany. 1947, Congress proposes a two-term limitation on the presidency. Well, I think turnabout is only fair. I think there should be a two-term limit on everybody. And that will keep those who think they're royalty from spending the rest of their life slapping at the public trough. 1947, John D. Rockefeller Jr., financier and philanthropist, donates the New York City East River site to the UN, where they built their building. 1949, SS police chief in the Netherlands, Hans Abinrauter's request for a pardon is denied. And in response to that request, he was shot by a firing squad. On this day in 1958, Elvis Presley joined the U.S. Army. Let's see if there's anything else. It doesn't look like. In 1980, ABC's nightly Iran hostage crisis program is renamed Nightline and continues. In 1981, Nightline with Ted Koppel premiered on ABC. And I think that's pretty much got it for right now. You know, we've been talking about the most mysterious places in the world. Let's talk about some of the most unusual sovereign states. They're known as micronations. They've got flags and mottos and even currency. And a lot of them pretend to be real countries. Well, even if you are a Jeopardy champion, when the category comes to geography, there's a lot of the countries that might come up in conversation you ever heard of. These countries are commonly referred to as micronations. Small geographic entities that claim to be sovereign states despite no legal recognition from the outside world. And the question arises, do you have to be recognized by other countries to be a legitimate country? Let's talk about the Principality of Sealand. One of the best known and most notorious micronations is the Maritime Island, founded in 1966. It was founded by a retired British Army major by the name of Paddy Roy Bates and his family. They set up housekeeping on Ruff's Tower, an abandoned Royal Navy fort in the North Sea, 7 miles off the English coast. First used for pirate radio broadcasts. At that time, the BBC had a monopoly on the airwaves. The Bates family soon proclaimed Sealand as a sovereign nation. As absurdist and fanciful as Sealand seemed, the British took it very seriously, according to Ian Urbina, one of the few people to have visited the industrial concrete platform of this country. Declassified UK documents from the late 1960s reveal that Sealand prompted considerable fretting among officers who feared another Cuba was being created. Now, initially, there was a discussion about whether they should bomb Sealand, but the British government and various mercenary groups have made multiple attempts over the years to take the nation by force. But the Bates family have defended their home. Then we have the Republic of Molossia. Now, this micronation is located in Dayton, Nevada, founded by one individual, Kevin Baugh. It reportedly began as a school project. On a website detailing its history, including a brief overthrow when it was renamed Kickassia, Molossia lists quirky laws banning spinach and making it illegal to wear cowboy boots unless you already own at least 2 cows. Or to play percussion instruments in any bathroom. I would agree with both of those. Then we have the Dominion of West Florida. Now, some micronations were established for political reasons, such as the Dominion of British West Florida. Founded in 2005 by the self-designated Robert VII, Duke of Florida, who claims he inherited the peerage in 1969 based on an arcane and universally denounced interpretation of Spain's one-time dominion over Florida. The country has one mission, It wants to be reinstated as a member of the British Commonwealth. Of course, the U.S. government is not thrilled about that. Well, for micronations, let's turn to ghost towns. Now, some of these ghost towns began because of gold or diamond boom. And when the mines dried up, they collapsed. Others suffered natural disasters that made them uninhabitable. Now, whatever caused these towns to be abandoned, they're actually all windows to the past. In June of 1859, Canadian Henry Comstock discovered silver in the foothills of Mount Davidson, Virginia City, Nevada, and this kicked off a mass influx of people into the state. Miners from the California Gold Rush, as well as immigrants from around the world, came to Nevada in hopes of finding their fortune. Many boom towns, named for the overnight economic and population increase, consisted of general stores and saloons and flop houses for entertaining weary miners. And there were a few schools and jails thrown in for good measure. And these population expansions created employment opportunities, but unfortunately, the towns had to be abandoned nearly as fast as they were built because of the exhaustion of the minerals. Once the riches dried up, it was off to the next town in search of the next eureka moment. California and Texas are home to many mining-era ghost towns, but these three Nevada locales I'm going to talk about are at the top of the list of favorites, whether for their stunning scenery, epic stories, or their ghost. I mean, there's no wonder that Nevada is actually referred to as a silver state. Let's talk about Jarbridge. It's remote, a former gold mining town, about as far as one can get from neon lights in Las Vegas. It's set against the backdrop of the Jarbridge Wilderness Area. That's a lush forest home to big game animals, pristine lakes and streams, and 6,000-foot deep gorges. It's referred to as an inhabited living ghost town. It has 12 permanent residents. It's straight out of the 1900s. Step inside the original jail to see the final home of stagecoach robber and murderer Ben Cole. He left bloody palm prints all over the coach driver's seat, which, of course, sealed his conviction. Then we have Berlin, Nevada. During the silver rush, it was a bustling place, but it's completely abandoned in 1911. Now, thankfully, the state of Nevada preserved the town, ensuring a veritable mining town time capsule. Visitors can peek inside the windows of cabins to see everyday items like cutlery and dishes and old buckets and bottles and pot belly stoves and turn-of-the-century furniture. Wandering through the sagebrush and tumbleweed and of course, the town's cemetery makes you feel like you're on a movie set of an old Western. But you never know what you're going to find. Then we have Goldfield. It's a former 1902 gold rush town. One time it was the largest and wealthiest city in Nevada. It had paved streets, drinking fountains, even had Wyatt Earp. Today, visitors can attest to its spooky oddities. There was a story of the pregnant prostitute in room 109 at the Goldfield Hotel, whose cries are still heard by guests. Then there's the abandoned high school that's allegedly haunted by the spirit of a young female student. Now, there's not been any reports of sightings of the 80 barmen it took to staff Tech Ricard's saloon, known in 1904 as the longest bar in the state. 80 barmen is quite an interesting number. Well, let's talk about a tiny island off of Hong Kong's Sai Kung Peninsula. It became a Catholic haven. Originally built by Joseph Finamintz in 1890, what's referred to as St. Joseph Church, was actually restored in 2010. One of the most surprising structures on Yim Tin Sai, a small island off the coast of Hong Kong's Sau Kung Peninsula, is the St. Joseph's Catholic Chapel. Its Romanesque-style architecture with arched windows and doorways seems out of place in a village that was once inhabited by the Hakka, adherents to Chinese folk religions whose livelihood came from salt farming. Then in the late 19th century, Christian missionaries came in and made everybody wear pants, and they began proselytizing to the locals who converted to Catholicism. 1890, a missionary named Joseph Friedrich de Metz built the church. Eventually, the salt mines dried up, and by the 1940s, villagers began leaving in search of other opportunities. In 1998, the last of them moved away, abandoning the Ireland's deteriorating buildings. But in 2010, an individual named Colin Chan, an eighth-generation descendant of the Hakka villagers, returned and began restoring the abandoned stone houses and the church of his ancestors with help from the Catholic Church and UNESCO. Now, his goal wasn't just to preserve the buildings, but also the culture and the salt mining legacy. In fact, the island's name actually translates as a little salt pan in Cantonese. The renewed interest in Yim Tin Sai's history, coupled with its still untarnished natural beauties, made this tiny Catholic island, as it's called, a travel destination for curious tourists, as well as local fishermen, hikers, and bikers. You never know what you're going to find. Well, in 1908, Zacharias Lou Ala, a humble African railway worker, discovered a diamond while scouting near the desert town of Komenskop in a German colony in what's now the country of Namibia. He showed his supervisor what he had found, inadvertently kicked off one of the world's largest diamond rushes in history. A deluge of miners, mostly German, began swarming into the area. Luala and other members of local tribes, many of whom had suffered mass detention and genocide after an attempted uprising against the colonizers 2 years before, were denied any access to this newly found wealth. Soon, Komenskop became a surreal desert replica of a bustling German city. Homes boasted ornate Bavarian architecture, and it was a theater that offered opera with companies imported from Europe. Schools and hospitals sprang up as well, and let's not forget the beer halls, the casinos. And this new money brought in extravagance, as you might guess. One family had a pet ostrich that pulled a sled manned by Father Christmas on a wacky Yuletide display. Town was the site of the first X-ray station in the Southern Hemisphere. They even had an ice plant built in the desert. No less. When the mines began to be depleted, prospectors began moving south to more lucrative locales by the late 1950s. The settlers were all gone, leaving the buildings to the shifting sand dunes that are filling many of them with desert sand. Let's turn to South America's Atacama Desert. Now, while some deserts boast high temperatures of 130 degrees, the Atacama Desert, which straddles Chile and Peru, sounds like a comparable paradise with a comfy temperature range of 63 to 81 degrees. But Atacama is the most arid place on the planet. Evidence suggests that during certain periods, this desert has experienced zero rainfall for hundreds of years. And these days, even the driest place on Earth isn't exempt from a few sprinkles. The annual average is 1 millimeter per year. Surprisingly, plant life, including cactus, ferns, and some flowering plants, do thrive here. They've adapted by absorbing small amounts of dew and fog from the air. Some, like the Gare de Lyon, even showcase bright red or yellow blossoms every few years. Now, the Atacama Desert's 435 miles long and 12 miles wide, and it stretches, the stretch is known as the Nitrate Belt. One more time. In the 1880s, the mining of sodium nitrate to make fertilizer gave rise to several hundred mining towns. The abandoned town of Yungay, Peru, so dry that scientists have measured its precipitation at a quarter of an inch per decade. It's a particular interest to NASA for its hyper-arid, Mars-like environment. Astrobiologists have used it to study conditions on the red planet without ever having to leave Earth. Well, let's talk about Gunkanhima Island. It translates as Battleship Island. It's also known as Hashima Island, and it's situated in menacing waters about 9 miles off Nagasaki, Japan. Now, its history begins with the discovery of coal there in 1810. By the 1870s, mining was in full swing, and the workers and their families began living and working on Gunkanhima. Automaker Mitsubishi, which owned the island, tripled the size of the island through land reclamation. It also built a seawall to fortify the coast and concrete apartment buildings to house the residents. The company also provided schools and hospitals and shops and public swimming pools and entertainment centers. But it's, in spite of all that, it wasn't an oasis. For all the amenities, working conditions were inhumane. In an effort to ramp up the amount of total coal output during World War II, thousands of conscripted Korean civilians and Chinese prisoners of war were forced into slave labor under what could only be described as brutal conditions. Many went hungry and died from malnutrition or exhaustion. And after the war, the island became the most densely populated place on the planet, peaking out in 1959 with more than 5,000 residents occupying just 16 acres of space. Well, in the 1960s, oil began to replace coal as Japan's dominant energy source. Mitsubishi offered inhabitants first-come, first-served job opportunities off the island, and residents rushed to leave. And by 1974, Gunkanhima was permanently closed. 2015, the island's coal mine was named a World Heritage Site, but not before the Japanese government agreed to acknowledge its role in exploitative and cruel treatment of Korean and Chinese civilians during Japan's sweeping industrialization period. Now, some parts of the island are open to the public, except for babies and pregnant women, but only after signing a consent stating you're in good health. Bright green grass and shrubs shoot up among the gray concrete rubble of this post-apocalyptic ghost town, which many view as a sign that life does go on. But unfortunately, human life doesn't go on much there. Let's talk about an Italian ghost town. It's called Pendadatilo in its southern Calabria. And it presents a somewhat unsettling image. There's a cluster of ancient stone houses, a Byzantine-era church, and ruins of a medieval castle. They cling to the base of a strange rock formation in the Aspromonte mountain range. This towering spire of stone looms above the village and resembles a hand with skull-like fingers. And it's raised as a warning for all who would pass through its the area. Its name, Five Fingers from the Greek Pente and Dactylos, was bestowed upon it by the Greeks who settled there in the 7th century B.C. It was once an essential economic and military center in Greco-Roman times. Pendadatilo was attacked by Arab Muslims in the Middle Age and conquered by the Normans in the 12th century. But it was the aftermath of a horrific massacre in 1686 that gave the jagged mount behind the village its nickname, La Mano del Diavolo, or the Devil's Hand. Known as the Slaughter of the Alberti, this Massacre features a cast of characters that rivals anything Shakespeare came up with, and centers on a feud between two noble families, the Alberti and the Benevoli. This feud apparently ran deeper than that of the Montagues and the Capulets from Shakespeare's Romeo and Juliet. Antonietta Alberti, the daughter of the Marquis Alberti, had been promised in marriage to Baron Bernardino Benevoli. And the Baron swore his love for the young lady and believed it would heal the rift between the clans. Well, unfortunately for everybody concerned, Antonietta's brother, Lorenzo, had committed his sister's hand in marriage to Naples' viceroy, which the Baron Bernardino Benevoli considered a betrayal. Enraged, he armed himself along with his bloodthirsty followers and stormed near Berti Castle, murdered Antonietta's entire family. He spared her, forced her to marry him, and locked her in a convent for the rest of her life. According to the legend, villagers claimed a rock formation above Bentatilo harbors the evil of the Baron. As evidence, they cite a series of natural disasters from floods and to numerous earthquakes that eroded the landscape over the centuries. Finally, in 1968, the Italian government declared Bentatilo uninhabitable. Until the 1980s, it remained empty of residents. At that time, the volunteers began repairs on the dilapidated buildings, and artisans set up shops selling ceramic and wood and stonewares to tourists. There's even an annual film festival that brings directors from around the world. Set against the unique landscape that's home to prickly pears, mulberries, mimosas, and almond trees, this gathering of artists actually brings life to this area once again. Wonder what happened to Antonietta. Well, let's talk about, since we talk about film festivals, let's talk about some abandoned movie sets. Now, during production, movie sets are like many cities, populated with scores of actors and crew members. But once the filming is over with, the sets that are often beautiful and painstakingly crafted are left behind. And some of these are very worthy of visits. And some of them are actually real-life ghost towns. Well, let's turn to the Sahara Desert, Tunisia, as a matter of fact. The movie was Star Wars, The Phantom Menace. It's the most Espa spaceport settlement. Now, Tunisia's been a perennial film location for George Lucas's Star Wars franchise since the 1970s. And in a remote era of the Sahara Desert, you'll find one of the best-preserved sets. The otherwise otherworldly fiberglass buildings and papier-mâché facades of the fictional Mos Espa village on Tatooine, featured in Episode 1. You can see the moisture evaporators, Watto's shop, and the slave quarters. If it looks a little sparser than it did in the movie, that's because post-production, CGI was used to fill in the desert town with more buildings and aliens. Still, if you want to have your own film done of you wielding your lightsaber and pretending you're in a galaxy far, far away, this is a place to go. It's still there. Then in the movie Hills Have Eyes, Agadir, Morocco, here is the gas station. Now, if the 2006 remake of The Hills Have Eyes didn't disturb you, it's likely you'll be sleeping with the lights on after a visit to this set of the rundown gas station. This is where the doomed family in the film learns about a shortcut. Old dusty prop pieces, damaged cars, and bloodstains on the sign lends to its creepy facade. Fuel pumps actually work. So you might want to gas up your car and not stay all that long because, you know, sometimes art mimics reality. Then from the movie Popeye, Anchor Bay in Malta, we have Sweet Haven Village. For the 1980 Robin Williams film, it took crews 7 months to build the 19 buildings of the famed sailor's rickety seaside town. After production wrapped up, Sweethaven was transformed into a bustling attraction with rides and family-friendly events. Fat kids can even meet Popeye and friends, explore movie plots, and enjoy the bay for a fantastic boat ride. Bring your own spinach, though. Then in Henry River Mill Village in North Carolina, the movie was The Hunger Games. It's Panem's District 12. Built in 1905, Henry River Mill Village was home to townsfolk who worked spinning yarns for lace at the local mill. Deserted since the 1980s, the dilapidated colleges and country store, the perfect set for the impoverished District 12 and the Hunger Games, fictional nation of Panem. Fans can take tours of his real-life ghost town and reenact their favorite scenes with costumes. It's just an hour from Asheville, North Carolina. Additional scenes were filmed at the nearby DuPont State Forest, so you can see everything in the movie in this area. Well, from movie sets, let's talk about cemeteries. You know, preserved cemeteries from the 11th century, relics from antiquity that can be explored from beneath the ocean waves, violent eruptions that can threaten our existence, or human habitats carved from mountains. You can find it all in what's referred to as the underground. We're going to talk about some of these locations. Let's go to Granada. The caves in Cadiz, some of Spain's oldest and most treasured settlements. If your man cave or lady cave isn't quite cave enough, we might suggest the city of Guadix in the Granada province of southern Spain. For £90,000 or about $109,000, you can buy a three-bedroom cave with rock floors, a stone-built kitchen, and a private courtyard that's just perfect for all the parties you want to have. The whitewashed exterior is a nice contrast to the deep orange and brown mountain range out of which it's all carved. For centuries, locals have been living in these dwellings known as Trogloditas. It's in the foothills of the Sierra Nevada Mountains. And some of these caves have been passed down to members of the same family for thousands of years. Now, the history of this town dates back to the Stone Age, but the main town was founded by the Romans who came to mine silver in the nearby mountains. The Moors took over and ruled from the 8th to the 15th century. They erected Cadiz Alcazaba, a stunning fortress still stands today. It's been featured in a lot of movies. In 1492, the Catholic monarchy took control of the area and the Moors fled to the hills where they built homes into the rock, which gave them some respite from the elements. Today, there are over 2,000 of these cave dwellings, many updated with modern comforts, and the locals are proud to show them off. Now we're going to talk about the world's largest known cave, known as Hang Son Doong. It's in Vietnam. Measures over 3 miles long and reaches heights of 650 feet, making it the most massive cave in the world. With a total size of 1.4 billion cubic feet, it could house an entire New York City block, including all the skyscrapers. First explored in 2009, Song Doong, whose name means Mountain River Cave, was formed from the erosion of limestone by the raging force of the Rao Thong River, which runs through the cave. Inside the cave, you'll find a labyrinth of passageways, some of them with their own ecosystem. In one area, two giant sinkholes that formed in the cave's ceiling for over 500,000 years allow streams of light to pour in, which makes possible all types of plant and animal life. In a section known as Watch Out for Dinosaurs, moss-covered rocks reveal a limestone floor covered with exposed animal fossils and breathtaking prehistoric flora and fauna. Giant stalagmites and rocky paths give way to ancient jungles. In 2019, Oasis Adventure Tours, the only operator that can take you into the cave, invited a trio of expert British divers to explore the cave. They found an underwater tunnel connecting Hang Sun Dong to the nearby Hang Thong Cave, adding 1.6 million cubic meters to the site's total volume. Well, let's turn to the country of Poland. From meandering military complexes to economic centers, there is an incredible array of secrets concealed underneath Poland's surface. We're going to cover three of the most noteworthy sites. How about the Wieliczka salt mine, where you can find handcrafted chandeliers and artwork made of salt, stunning rock formations and lakes, as well as chapels, all underground. In the magical salt mine in southern Poland, you find all that and more. Beginning in the 13th century, miners started hollowing out tunnels, and over 700 years, the operation grew to 9 levels and 152 miles a quarter, eventually earning the title of the world's oldest continuously operating salt mine. Salt was crucial to the Polish economy for centuries, and once it was extracted, many of the caves were transformed into fantastical, ornate spaces used to host visiting royalty and world leaders. Now, the mine actually stopped working as a salt mine in 2006 and became a full-time tourist attraction at that point. And while there may no longer be live orchestra that plays for royalty, the inside remains simply breathtaking for the average tourist. How about Project Risi? From 1943 to 1945, Nazi Germany used forced labor to construct Project Risi, or translates as giant. It's a network of 9 underground cities in the Owl Mountains. These subterranean shelters are built to protect weapon production from bombing raids. And while the Allied forces eventually interrupted the work, a series of tunnels and buildings do remain. Osałka, near the town of Warbrinsk, is the second largest, most complete. The Allies removed much of the equipment. The rest was lost to thieves, but visitors can still check out two large constructs known as the gym and the casino. The casino is actually 164 feet long and equipped with window openings, fireplace pipes, and chipboard for insulation. In the gym, you can see the traces of a railway likely meant to link all the cities together. Now, then there's what's known as the Market Square of Krakow. Dating to the 13th century, Cloth Hall, the main building of Krakow's Market Square, is magnificent as it sits. But when archaeologists uncovered artifacts nearby in 2005, they wondered what else might be below the surface. Well, careful exploration led to the astonishing discovery of an entire medieval city, with roads and relics and everyday possessions, as well as aqueducts, original stone walkways, market stalls, and even a vampire cemetery that was established in the 11th century. And to make the mind-blowing subterranean city below the market accessible, the Rhynek Underground Museum, built 13 feet below street level, uses a multimedia mix of relics, holograms, and video to further transport visitors back through the ages. When you start digging, you never know what you're going to find. Now let's talk about some of the biggest ice caves on the planet. Now, an ice cave is, many believe, is just a cave made out of ice. But it's really not that simple. Ice caves refer to bedrock caverns whose interiors have thick ice layers despite warmer temperatures above ground. Cold air inside the cave freezes water that finds its way inside through fissures. Now, these aren't to be confused with glacier caves, which are human-made grottos tunneled out to explore glaciers from inside. Both types are actually scarce, and dazzling to the eye. Now, in Austria, we have Eisenwelt. Locals in the 19th century feared this monstrous frozen cave, believing it was a portal to hell. Maybe it was the fierce wind that blows from the entrance that gave rise to this legend. It was not explored until 1879, and it was discovered the cave extends 26 miles into the Tenningenberg range in the Alps. Today, visitors ride a cable car up the mountainside and are treated to the incredible panoramic views. Once inside the Giants of Ice Cave, narrow corridors and tunnels lead to the massive natural ice sculptures for which it was named. Since there's no electricity inside, these formations are illuminated by the guide's gas lamp, making them appear to dance in the flickering glow. Then we have the Langeskov Ice Cave in Ireland. In Iceland. The largest human-made glacier cave in the world is open for business in the western part of the Langeskov Glacier in Iceland's western highlands. Despite dim LED lights, guide visitors on their slippery descent inside this frozen wonder. If an up-close look at the thick layers of ice that had formed over 3,500 years isn't enough to get your attention, this incredible space has a specially built area that you can rent out to entertain guests for a special event. Maybe a wedding or a funeral. Coats and mittens are not included. You have to bring your own. And in France, we have the La Mer des Glaces. It's a true wonder of wonderland inside this man-made cave of France's largest great glacier. The La Mer des Glaces is known as the Sea of Ice. Workers have to redig the grotto each summer as the glacier is continually moving, but visitors can easily enjoy the fruits of these labors. It's just a brief cable car ride from the train station. You disembark from the cable car, descend 430 steps to enter the grotto, where the thick, dazzling blue-colored energy of the glacier will actually blow your mind. If it is on your bucket list, you need to get a move on. This melting glacier is receding by 229 feet annually. It's a, for lack of a better term, a literal melting pot. We also have, among some of the most mysterious places in the world, volcanoes. They're erupting all the time with lava flowing throughout our oceans. When we think of a volcano's hot flowing magma, more often than not, you get a picture of Mount St. Helens in Washington State, Krakatoa in Hawaii, or even Mount Vesuvius near Pompeii in Italy. But the reality is over 80% of volcanic eruptions happen where we can't see them, below the ocean's floors. In the Pacific Ocean, we have Havre, lying 3,000 feet deep in the middle of the Pacific Ocean. Its closest inhabited country is New Zealand. The Havre volcano is one of the world's largest. The most recent eruption in 2012 lasted almost 3 months, during which time its vents spewed lava and ash and pumice into the ocean. In fact, it was the massive pumice rafts floating in the ocean surface that first clued scientists into what was going on beneath the surface. And we've just about run out of time, but I got time for one more. Let's talk about the West Mata volcano in the Pacific Ocean. 2009, scientists captured spectacular video footage of the West Mata volcanic eruption 140 miles southwest of Samoa. They got high-def images of bubbling lava coming directly from the seafloor. For the first time, we've been able to examine up close the way ocean islands and submarine volcanoes are born, according to Barbara Ransom, program director for the National Science Foundation. They funded this little escapade. Well, we've come to the end of today's show. We'll be back tomorrow and we'll talk about more of the world's mysterious places. Till then, this is Ken Hudnall for the Ken Hudnall Show saying have a truly great evening.